Okay. So actually, unexpectedly, I had hoped to give one more shiur, but unexpectedly, I am not going to be available on Sunday mornings for the next 4 weeks, for good reason. I've decided that, in light of everything, I am actually going to go take a 4-week self-defense course. So, and it meets on Sunday mornings from 8:30 to 11:30. I also need to, it includes part target practice that I don't, you know, I'm a pretty good shot, but still, I could use it. And, so I will tell Rabbi Cohen that, once the 4 weeks are gone, that, if we want to continue the word, I'm certainly open to it. So in the meantime, this will be the last year for, at least till the end of the civil year. Okay. I'm sorry? Oh, you're gone already?
Yeah.
Ah. Wow, okay. So I'll say Tzedchem L'Shalom now, just in case I don't see you. Okay, I want to, so all right, so it's a good thing we're going to get to the Ramban. I can't give you an introduction to Rishonim without getting to the Chachmei, to the great Rishonim of Sfarad, who actually live in two different specific periods. We're not going to have time to address the incredible achievements of the early Sephardic Rishonim, who were active more or less just before and during the lifetimes of Rabbeinu Gershom Rashi and so on. The early period, which culminates with the two major figures, who are Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, who left us the Rif at the back of the Gemara, he didn't write it to me at the back of the Gemara, that's how I did it, I printed it, and even greater, the Rabbi Yehosef Ibn Migash, who was the teacher of the Rambam's father, of Maimon HaDayan, who the Rambam says that his understanding, his genius was such great that it literally stuns. Leaves a person speechless to know anything about it. That era is a totally different type of parshanot, and that golden age of there was no golden age in Spain, by the way, never existed. It was made up by a bunch of Jewish apologists for all kinds of other reasons. There was a golden age in Spain in the sense that Jewish culture, flourished. There was no golden age in Spain of living together and camaraderie between Muslims and Jews. That's all made up. They were bloody, but it was, well, occasionally it was, but it wasn't the kind of idol that they all talk about, because that never happened and couldn't happen. In any event, that golden age of Jewish creativity, which included poetry and philosophy and all kinds of other stuff, not just mentioned Talmud Torah, came to an end in 1148 when a fanatic Muslim group called the Almohadim invaded southern Spain from North Africa and literally wiped out Jewish life in Spain. Jews either, they forced Jews, they gave them the choice of conversion or died. Jews either ran away, or they pretended they were Muslims, or they ran away to the north. But the point is that that they left a total scorched earth as far as Jewish life is concerned, and it took about 50, 60 years for Jewish life to recover. That recovery was affected by Talmidei Chachamim and Gedolim, who started flourishing at the end of the 12th or early 13th century, which we will get to. But before we get there, we need to deal with one other point about Tosfos, and then that will be a natural segue into our discussion of, basically we're going to discuss Rabbeinu Yonah and the Ramban in a totally and wholly and woefully insufficient manner, but I have no choice. In general, everything, with regard to everything I said, I've told you over the last month, you can say without any hesitation that which the Kohen Gadol used to say to the people after he'd read Torah on Yom Kippur afternoon. He would roll up, according to the Mishnah in Yuma, he would roll up the Sefer Torah and look at the people and would say, Yoter Mimashe Katavti Katuvkan. There's a lot more here than I've already read, so don't think that you're so Yotze the Mitzvah Talmud Torah for the rest of your life because you came once a year to hear me read four passages from Chumash. There's a lot more to this. Okay, I want to highlight one point, which I actually mentioned last week in passing, but it's part of a broader pattern. I mentioned to you last week that the difference between the classic Sephardic way in which contradictions are addressed and the classic Ashkenazi way is the fact that Sephardic posts have a tendency to posket according to what I said was sugya d'shamatata, the central organizing and from a contextual point of view, the central discussion of the issue, with all other ones being peripheral. And if there's a contradiction between the central sugya and the later sugya, so go with the central sugya because that's where Chazal really invested their major efforts. Interestingly, there were those, this is very non-brisk, but there were those who argue that not a few of the Rambam, of the contradictions in the Rambam are like that. In other words, the Rambam will contradict himself and say this over here and this over there. And one of the ways of explaining this is, again, it's very non-brisk, but one of the ways of explaining this is to say, no, the Rambam has a discussion in place A, which is its normal discussion. That's what you should follow. If he puts a different twist on things elsewhere, that's because the context required it, but it's really not normative. It's not, you know, it's that what he needed to do over there is what forced him to say it. But if you want to paskin, you paskin according to the sugya d'shmatata or the sugya d'halacha. In any event, and Bali tells us, why does he know? There's no such thing. Nothing is disposable. Nothing is dispensable. Everything can be brought into consideration, and therefore every single aspect is right. You have to bring it. You have to sort of find ways to determine why it is that it says one way in one place and one way in another place, and you deduce from that new insights and new concepts, which then expand your halachic universe. That's one. Okay, that we said last week. In addition, and not unrelated to this, is the fact that generally speaking, a Sephardic tradition and Ashkenazic tradition, again, I'm doing this in very broad strokes, have different attitude towards the question of, is there such a thing as one truth? Okay, now we live in a world which is ultimately based on Aristotelian logic, unified value logic, I think it's called. It's called N logic, where something is either right or it's not right. It's either A or it's not A. So if it's not right, it's wrong. Now, you're not allowed to say that in the world of political correctness, but it's not logical. Because if everybody's right, then nobody's right. And if all truths are correct, there's no such thing as truth. But it's a violation of the word truth, ostensibly. Nevertheless, the Sephardic tradition has generally been to say that positions are either right or they are wrong. And for there is an aspiration amongst them, poskim, to in fact summarize and to come up with the answer. As a result, you'll find that the only poskim who try to really codify everything and give you here's what it is, they can disagree on different points, but the aspiration to come up with one answer is quintessentially Sephardic. So who wrote the major, who are the major poskim? Look at the little guys up at the top, Ein Nishpat Ner Mitzvah. Who are these people? You have the Rif, okay? You have the Rambam. You have the Tur, for our purposes, of course it was written in Toledo, for our purposes it reflects a Sephardic ambiance, and not to mention the Beis Yosef, and followed out the Shulchan Aruch, in which the Beis Yosef goes on out of his way in the introduction to say, you know, in our day it's terrible. It's not just two Torahs; it's 1,000 Torahs. You know, we need to have this like one truth, and that's all. Ashkenazim, as we'll see, have a totally different take, and in order to be able to, to appreciate that, we need to take a look at very briefly at a number of sources. So take a look at the first source. It's a Gemara in famous Gemara in Ervin Daf Gud Gimel Amud Bet. I'm a Rabbi Yaba, I'm a Shmuel. Shalosh Shanim Nechleku Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. Halalu Romim Halacha Kamotenu, Valalu Romim Halacha Kamotenu. So for 3 years, Beit Shammai Beit Hillel were at it. We were at it yelling for 3 years. They said, the Haskel Halacha is like us, and the Halacha is like us. We're right. It's like the old joke about the Rebbetzin, right? You're right. Yatza bat kol, a heavenly voice went out of Amra and said, Elu ve'elu divrei elukim chayim hein, v'alocha kebeit hilel. They're both, you're right, but Halacha is like Beit Hillel. So this raises a logical conundrum. You can't both be right and say he's right. Or we paskin like that. What does that mean? So here you actually have two fundamentally different takes. Skip down to the Ritva. The Ritva, the Rabbi Yontef ben Avram of Seville, was a Talmud of the Ramban. and of the Ramban. In other words, the Ramban had two Talmidim. One had a lot of Talmidim, but the two major Talmidim were the Rajba, Reb Shlomo ben Avram ben Aderet, who was the Rav of Barcelona, and his competition, what's it? Rav Aaron Halevi, also Barcelona. And the Ra'ah was a premier Talmud of primarily of the Ra'ah. In any event, the Ritva was also very influenced by Chachmei Ashkenaz, as we'll see in a minute. Not with regard to him, but with regard to Ramban. And he writes as follows: Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Sha'alu rabbanei Tzorfat zechronam livracha. The rabbis of France have asked, Hayachiv shar shiyu shneihem divrei Elokim chayim. Ze oser v'ze matir. They can't both be right. You can't have something which is treif and it's kosher. V'tertzu, and they responded, Ki kishalam obshelam arvel Torah, hir'ula wal kol davar v'davar, arba'im v'teisha panim li'isur, v'arba'im v'teisha panim li'heter. When Moshe Rabbeinu went to heaven to learn Torah, to see how the thing works, they showed him for every single shayla he could make equally valid arguments, 49 arguments this way and 49 arguments that way. So Moshe Rabbeinu is sitting there with his jaw drops, and he said, wait a minute, v'sha'ala kodesh baruch hu alzeh. He says, how does this work? So v'ama and Kaddish Baruch, it's right or it's wrong. Amar and said to Kaddish Baruch Hu, "Shehei zeh masur lechachmei Yisrael shebechol dor v'dor v'yeh hachra'a kamotam." He says, "I am relying upon both sides are legitimate, both sides are right. I give you the right to decide which one you choose to follow." In other words, there are multiple truths in heaven. Okay, it's both Usr and Chayiv in, is there both Putter and Chayiv and Usr and Mutter and Tameh and Tahar in heaven? But when it comes to applications, you decide what's right. So they took a vote and they decided Beit Hillel was right. Doesn't mean Beit Shammai is not right. And in fact, there are a lot of sugyas where the Gemara goes out of its way to spend lots and lots and lots of time to deal with the logic of Beit Shammai. The question: what is that? Why bother? The answer is because Beit Shammai is also Chefetz of Torah. It's not, we don't paskin that way. There's a lot of shittas we learn, we study that we don't paskin like that, but we study it anyways. So the point is that there are multiple truths in heaven. You paskin on whatever the basis for your pasuk is, but all of it is considered a chefetz shel Torah. That position is not just quintessentially a French position or a Tosfos position. You find the same kind of attitude in the Yerushalmi and in Medrash Tilim, both of which are Eretz Yisraeli kinds of sources. So take a look at the Yerushalmi and Sanhedrin Perek Dalid that I brought you. Amar Rabbi Yanai, Ilu nitna Torah chatucha lo ata leregel amida. If the Torah had been given in such a way that there's only one answer, doubt, like a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, we wouldn't have been able to survive. Ma tam, well, how do you know that? Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe, Amalef, God says to Moses, Amalef anav, and Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, Ribbono shel Olam hodieni heyachi halacha. Tell me how to paskin. How should halacha work? Amarlo, so God said to him, Acharei rabim lahatot, Rabo amizakim, zachu, Rabo mechayvim, chayvu. Kedeshet tehei haTorah nidreshet memten panim tameh umemten panim tahor. Okay? The thing is set up in such a way that you can go, that the authority of Chazal is such that they have a legit, if you follow the proper methodology. That's not, the proper methodology doesn't mean that I can go and say, oh, so historians say X, Y, and Z was what happened, so therefore I'm going to change halacha. That's a violation of the integrity of halacha, that people standing were different and attitudes were different, so therefore Chazal were prejudiced. You're not allowed to, that's not legit. However, if you work within the system and you come to different positions and he says usher, he says mutter, that's perfectly legitimate. You have to paskin, because you can't say it's both usher and mutter, but in terms of the legitimacy of the approach, that's how Torah works. Multiple answers. Okay? And the story, and so you find it in Yerushalmi. You find it also in Medrash Tilim to say exactly the same thing, almost the exact same story. Exactly the same story that is mentioned by the Ritva. Amar Rabbi Yana, lo nitna Torah chatichin. It's a different, slightly different version of the same statement, but again, the same idea. As a result, since there's no end result, if you look in Tosfos will give you 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 20, 1,000 answers for every question, and that's okay, because Torah is endless. And your insights are endless, and there's tons of room for creativity. And the closer, more and more insights you take out, the better off you are, and the more powerful the religious experience, not to mention the more powerful the intellectual experience, because every single answer you come up with addresses the question from another angle, and Torah therefore expands, literally, lahagdil Torah or lahadira. Now this idea is not just a medieval idea. It's actually expressed, I'm not going to read through this because it's too long and the text is bad. You can read it on your own, with your eyes. The Yamshel Shlomo, the same Yamshel Shlomo, the Reb Shlomo Lurie that we mentioned last week, who talked about the fact how Tabali Tosfos rolled the ball, right, treated the Gemara like as a sphere, and so on, said, look, a result of that is the fact that multiple ideas are built in to the Torah per se. He goes so far as to say as follows: The Arizal is noted to have said that when it comes to prayer, every single one of the Shvatim, every single one of the tribes had their own sort of Nusach HaTfilah. They had their own modality of prayer, and therefore they have Nusach HaTfilah. And then there's sort of like this one Nusach HaTfilah the Ari provided for everybody that's good for everyone. It's sort of one size fits all. Okay? The Marshal takes it one step further, and he said every single Jew at Har Sinai, 600,000 people, heard a different Torah. Now, it doesn't mean that this one said you should say there's no Kriya Shema or whatever. The nuances are important. So he says, as a result, you have to decide, but you can't just dismiss other opinions. So in other words, so final bottom line: the result of the rolling the sphere this way, that way, the other way means that the Torah is open ended and it never and it's just endless in terms of what the insights they can reach out to. Psak is a technical requirement, because you have to work and figure out what you should do. That is generally based on consensus or whatever, or the authority of one overarching gadol, whatever the case might be, but it says nothing about the essential truthfulness of that action. That in contemporary, I once asked one of the great medical ethicists of our time, Professor Baruch Brody, what is that? He says that's called multi-value logic, which is actually quite the rage today. That you can have actually more than one thing's being right. By the way, that's all a brisk is based on that. What's Svei Dinim? The Gemara says something is X or it's A or it's B. So we say, no, it's both. The only question is, how do the two integrate? You know, and how do they, what's the dominant element? What's the negative element? I don't know, whatever element you want. I mean, so for example, Kachibetika bias are both, both have a din of dini mominus, and they have a din of dini, of kachin. As a din of dini mominus, and as a din of kedusha. So what is it? So does the dini mominus create the kedusha dini mominus? How does that work? All right. Similarly, with regard to Kachim. Kachim has a funny situation where you're passing things over to Beis HaMikdash, but there's no kinyanim. The kinyan is giving a vow, but a vow is not kinyan. How does that work? In other words, is it this or that? No, it's both. But you have to see how they interact in a very, very unique way. Okay, everybody's right. That is typically Ashkenazic. By the way, what Ashkenazim do when they get these summaries of all of Jewish law from day one till today, what they generally do is they tack on the Ashkenazic practice in order to make it accessible, the book accessible to everybody. And usually if you're in yeshiva, the Rebbe will usually say something like, it's a wonderful thing that the Rama did, that he added the Mappa to the Shulchan Aruch, because by doing that, he made the Shulchan Aruch accessible and available and acceptable to all of Klal Yisrael, except for the Teimanim. Very nice. Except what? The Mechaber wanted to make one book for everybody with this is the rule. And there are places where he leaves things open, but generally speaking, he says this is it and goodbye. All right? How do you end up making the Shulchan Aruch acceptable and accessible to everybody? By undermining the original purpose of the author. I mean, that's the irony that people don't sufficiently notice. Okay, that is what we'd call Ashkenazic epistemology. When you come to the Sephardim, whole different ballgame. Turn the page. The Rambam actually says makes this point, and he's not the he just is the ultimate the ultimate, the best, the person giving the most expression to this. The Rambam makes this point in many a number of places, not Gdamah LaParish HaMishnayis, but he says it most accessibly and most cogently in actually a passage in the Mor Nevuchim. The Mor Nevuchim in Chelek Aleph, chapter 71, the Rambam discusses the fact that his assumption that philosophy, which he assumes is an integral part of Torah, for the Rambam there is no Limudei Kodesh and Limudei Chol. De facto, there is Limudei Kodesh and expanded Limudei Kodesh. There's the Torah in the broad sense and Torah in the narrow sense, as Rav Soloveitchik used to say. So that the Rambam assumes a philosophical tradition, which includes all the sciences, was always part of the Torah, but it got lost. Otherwise, it would not be, for a number of reasons, it wouldn't be legitimate. Otherwise, you get into the whole problem of secular studies. Is it Bittul Torah or not? The Rambam thinks that studying philosophy is not only not Bittul Torah. In Hilchos Talmud Torah, says explicitly that you should allocate part of your study of Talmud Torah to philosophy. In any case, notice what the Rambam says though in this introduction. It takes him 70 chapters to get to this, but all right, that's another story. Da. When the Rambam says da, or anybody says da, Ibn Ezra, all these, whoever it is, da means waving a red flag, guys, this is something really important, pay attention. You may have lost me in the first 70 pages, but this is 70 chapters, but now try to concentrate. Da. Ki ha-chokhmot ha-rabot asher hayu be'umatenu ba-mitat elu inyanim. In other words, the many, many forms of wisdom and sciences that we had, that were originally indigenous to our nation, proving those matters that I've just finished discussing, among them being, he talks about the incorporeality of God and all kinds of other things, and the proper understanding of various difficult terms in Nevuah. He says, Avdu ba'arech hazman, they were lost to us over time, and during the time during which ignorant peoples ruled over us. And partly because not everybody was allowed to study them. We had to be a specific type of person with a specific type of disposition, a specific level of piety, specific level of scholarly attainment. So therefore, the less people know the material, right, the more chance of it being forgotten. V'lo haya davar hamutar lifnei b'nei adam kulam. And it wasn't allowed, not everybody was allowed to have access to it. The only thing people were allowed to have, ela divrei asfarim bilvad. And this stuff was studied al peh. Ukvar yadata. This is the important part. Ukvar yadata. Shafilu a talmud amikubal. That even the Gemara, which we all live by, which is accepted by everybody, lo haya mikubar b'sefer mikedem. It wasn't originally written. I think I told you that I had this class that I taught in a few summers ago, a bunch of very yeshivish guys, and I mentioned that the oral law, the Talmud, wasn't always written, and they started yelling at me, "Api kairos, kaifer," and I'm sitting there going, "What? Why do you think it's called Torah Shebal Peh? Like they never thought about that. Like why is that? Like why? Because oh, it was oral. Anyway." The Gemara originally also wasn't written down such that it could spread throughout the entire people, based on a Mamre Chazal, which we generally know from Maseches Gittin. Dvorim shamarti lecha al pia iyata rashoi lomram bichtav. Things which are oral should not be written down, and lehefech. V'hayaze tachlit ha-chokhma badat. And keeping things oral was really, really smart. You're going to hear an echo of somebody here in a minute. Shehu barach, this avoided, rimashin afal bo b'achorna. By keeping things oral, you avoided what happened later. Ratzalomar, meaning, rova deot v'estargamus fekot naflot b'lashon ha'amechubar b'sefer. Ushkaka titchaber bo. Because once you have something written down, people can misinterpret and they can misunderstand, and there's nobody to exercise quality control. V'titchadesh ha'machloket bein ha'anashim, and that leads to machloket and halach among people. V'shuvam chaburot, and to not sectarianism in the sense of heresy, but you know, so this is minig Ashkenaz, and this is minig Sfar, this is minig Volin, and this is minig Romaniot, and this is minig this, and minig Damascus, and minig Chal. They don't talk to each other, and Minixan and Ad and Dolphin don't talk to each other, and the Toshavim and the Mogoroshim in Morocco, and on and on and on and on and on. Ad lahoda abba. V'titchadesh habilbul b'masim. And as a result, everybody's going to be confused. And then he says that the truth of the matter is, aval nimsar davar bazek kulo lebet din gadol kemo shebayanu bechuburat talmudim ukemo sheyore alav davar torah. Initially, when we had a Sanhedrin, they answered all the questions and there was no problems. Vim torah, and not only that, but even later, it was kept oral. Who does that remind you of? Right, exactly. Rav Shalom Gaon said exactly that point. He says, you know, writing things down is a recipe for disaster because you can't learn properly that way. It's a matter of learning not just information, but also method. Point is, according to the Rambam, by implication, is machloket a good thing or is it a bad thing? It's a bad thing. And therefore, it should be avoided at all costs. All right? And in fact, the Rambam and we don't have time to do this, but if you take a look, everybody should read this anyways. Take a look at the Hakdama of the Perush HaMishnayos of the Rambam. And the Rambam there bends over backwards to prove that the overwhelming majority of parts of Torah Shebaal Peh proper never had a machlokas. Why? Because something's either true or it's not true. And he bemoans the existence of machloket. And one of the reasons he wants to write the Mishnah Torah is to make order. I mean, it's not the only reason, but that's one of the reasons, because, and then he says, he prefaces the whole book, it's not a book, it's a literature by itself. That's his pasuk that is the slogan for the entire Mishnah Torah. I see it all there, it makes sense, it's all paskin, it's all clear, everything's accessible, it's perfect, okay? Now the fact that things can be right or wrong, it's not just a matter of opinions, it's also a question of how you learn Gemara. All right. Now, this is really not traditional Ashkenazi, never mind Brisk. The Rambam, in a letter that he wrote to a student of his, who lived at the time in, I believe, in Damascus, writes the following. For this is the Grota Rambam. It was put out by Rav Yitzchak Shilat. Also, something which is fascinating reading. You see, the Rambam as a real human being. He writes. He doesn't write about. He doesn't just write learning. He writes about contemporary issues. He writes little. He writes haskamas for people to raise money for pidyon shvuyim, and he intervenes on behalf of poor widows. It's really very inspiring. Anyways, he writes his letter to. He writes this letter to his student, and he writes, how should you develop yourself intellectually? He writes, Atzatihi, my advice is, Shetase yigiacha hamischar v'limudam b'fuwa. You make a living? Rambam, don't forget, was absolutely opposed to anybody taking money for Torah. He says, either go into business, or learn how to be a doctor, or both. Im ha'esik b'talmud Torah be'emet. And accompanied by studying Torah properly. All right? Now, Be'emet would, by definition, include philosophy. He mentions this in he says explicitly in the, or implies explicitly. How are you implying explicitly? It's pretty clear from his introductions to the Moed Avuchim. V'lo tilamed, and don't teach, Ela hilchot harav, or tilmud. You should start off, your major effort should be on the Rif. Interesting, he doesn't say, you know. Learn the Mishnah Torah. He says, learn the Rif. Why the Rif? Because the Rif gives you the major machlokot and tells you the bottom line. Okay? But always keep both books open. Keep the Rif over here and my book over here, and you'll compare. Im mitzata machloket, if you find that I disagree with the Rif, okay, teidu, you should know, she'iyun ha-talmud mevi lekach. It's because we disagreed we disagreed on the interpretation of the relevant Talmudic passage. V'tidrashu b'mkomotav, and therefore look up all the parallel sugyas to see exactly where we disagree. Okay, by the way, he doesn't say always paskin like me. You see that? It's interesting, I just noticed this. I assume he really had a prejudice towards his own opinions, but it's really kind of interesting. I never noticed the fact he doesn't say, you know, this is all very interesting, but, you know, I'm right. Then he goes on, he says, and that's all you should do. In other words, first start with the Rif, then go to the Rambam, and then, if you need it, go to the Gemara. V'im techalez zmancha b'perushim, u'b'ferushei havayot ha'gemara, v'otam ha'dvarim asher hinachnu me'ayim alam, harei zeh ibud zman u'miyut, hazman u'miyut ha'toelet. However, stam to learn Gemara, stam to learn Gemara and to worry about back and forth arguments which have no practical ramifications, what we call an okimta, that's a waste of time. Now, that's a striking statement. In other words, you have a sugya that goes on for 3 pages, all right? Let's take, let's take something you've done recently. Whether a couple gets married, did you do the sugya of Bil V'Lechachilah B'Shavs? But the Dabar Shem Miskaven? Okay. So you have, that goes on for 3.5 blot, right? This and this and this, and once they finish, they start again, on and on and on and on and on, okay? But a lot of the time, the Amoraim say, well, this proves the one side, and the Gemara says, no, it can equally refer to something else. Okay, we learn nothing from that, let's go weiter. All of those are non-probative, says the Gemara, says the Rambam, by implication, we didn't prove anything from it, it has no halachic ramifications immediately. Goodbye. Top line, what's the machloket? Bottom line, what's the psak? That is typically quintessentially 10th century, 11th century Sephardic, because you want to know what the basis of the halacha is, you want to know where the bottom line is, the opinions that are not probative, they're not right. I mean, the proof is not right to either side, because you can equally darshan it either way, weiter. That's exactly what the Rif does. All of the intermediary stages of the discussion, he takes out because in that world, that position. Now, Tosfos will say, what? You can derive billions of new ideas and insights from every single Havamina. That's not the classical Derech of Sfarad. Again, so Machloket is bad, has to be avoided. You paskin, you strive for one absolute halachic truth, and your emphasis is always studying Gemara is not necessarily for the lasok b'divrei Torah, for the thing itself, but rather lasuke shmatata aliba de hilchata, to be able to paskin. That's the bottom line. Okay? And in fact, this goes down through halachic history all the way down to today. Rav Avadia Zatzal has all kinds of things in which he argues eish lahava against the kind of pilpulim and hakiris that go on in Lithuanian yeshivas, because if it's not aliba de hilchata, he's not going to say it's not Talmud Torah, but he's not going to say that it's not the priority way to study. Okay, you have to always also remember in this case with the Rambam and Mekubalim, by the way, for that matter, felt that you had to, if you spend all your time with Okimtas, and he said, then you're not going to have time to study Ruchnius. It's also a consideration. All right, but in any event, the Rambam statements here are very, very, are really very, now, again, I said this very, perhaps more strongly than I should have, because there's plenty of classic Sephardic, Spanish, pre-1148 kinds of study of Okimtas, but in general, that is the trend. Now, in the second half of the 12th century, okay, slowly, as things stabilize, you begin to get the revival of Torah study in northern Spain. Jews have run away in large part to the north, which is now under Christian rule. The Christians are slowly but surely reconquering Spain from the Muslims. At this juncture, the Christians are very much in favor, are very much in need of Jewish services, so therefore the conditions of their resettlement are relatively good. And by moving into the Muslim or into the Christian world, they are the those Talmidei Chachamim who have survived are now, or are born there or develop, now become come into contact with the achievements of both the Rishonim of Provence, southern France, of whom I also didn't have time to talk, and for our purposes, more importantly, of northern France and Germany, especially northern France, meaning Rashi and the Balei HaTosfos. Now we know that Rashi's parish already made it to Spain in the time of this Rabbi Yehosef ibn Migash, who died in 1144. And apparently, and so there's reason to think that Rambam had some idea about Rashi, but not much. We don't know exactly how much got there. By the time the late 12th century happens, the 1100s, the Rashi's Perush and the early Balei Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam and Ri, have already made it, already coming into Provence, and therefore they are slowly coming into northern Spain as well. The person who begins the process by which Torah is restored in Spain is Rabbi Meir Halevi Abulafia. Rabbi Meir Halevi Abulafia was from an aristocratic Spanish Jewish family. He lived in Toledo. He was best known for actually three things. He was a philosopher. He wrote a book called the Emunah HaRamah. He was a polemicist. He led the charge against the Rambam in the first of three great worldwide controversies about the Rambam's philosophy. Later became something of an aficionado of the Rambam, but that's another story. And for our purposes, he single-handedly set the stage for the reestablishment of a Spanish Torah world by having his own yeshiva in Toledo. But in addition, he wrote Perushim on large numbers of sectas of Shas, of which we really only have, two and a half. We have his parish. His parish is called Yad Rama, Rabbeinu Meir Halevi, which is on. Ready now? We have it on Sanhedrin. We have it on Baba Basra. And recently, somebody put out an edition by pulling together quotations elsewhere on. I think Gittin and Kedushin actually now. In any event, the most widely used are the ones on Sanhedrin and on Baba Basra. Baba Basra is much bigger than the one on Sanhedrin. Apparently, he created two versions of every single parish, a long version and a short version. So we have a short version when it comes to Sanhedrin. We have a long version when it comes to Baba Basra. He writes largely in the style of classic Sephardic Rishonim before him, but he begins to refer to Tosfos, and you see in his writings the beginnings of the kind of method of, you know, Shach Levitalia and resolving Stirot and stuff like that that you find in among Tosfos proper. There is an interesting possibility. A teacher and colleague of mine, Rabbi Professor Dov Septimus, argues, and it's interesting, he never put it in his book, he has a wonderful biography, the best biography of the Rama, called Hispano-Jewish Culture in Transition. It's a little book, it's very, very good, it's in the library, I think, it should be. But in his doctorate, there he doesn't talk about Yad Rama, it's interesting. He talks about the Maimonidean controversy, all kinds of other things. In his doctorate, he has a chapter about Yad Rama, and he argues, and I think cogently, I think it's persuasively. Everything he does is cogent. He argues persuasively that the Rama was really very farsighted and realized that the future of learning was going to go with Tosfos, and he wrote these Perushim not just to jumpstart Torah learning in Spain, but also to sort of act like the, what's the name of the Sefer that Rabbi Kahana writes? Sort of like a Meimenuchot on Tosfos, to get people in Spain used to the idea of learning in the new style that was fomented by the Balei Tosfos. But he's really only prehistory. Things start getting going with two first cousins. One of them's name is Rabbeinu Yonah ben Avraham of Gir Harona, and his first cousin, whose name was Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman of Harona, who got his mail under the name actually Bonastruk de la Porta. The Ramban, yes, had a non-Jewish name. We know that. How do we know that? We know that because in 1263 he debated a mumar, a mishumen whose name was Paulus Christianus, and he writes in the Vikuach, in which the Ramban gives his version of the confrontation. He writes at the end that the king was so impressed with the way that I argued that he gave me a check gave me an honorarium check. I mean, it was 300-600 mervedi. I have no idea how much that is, but it's a nice chunk of money. And said thank you. Years later, a scholar named Jean Regnier went through the archives of the Kingdom of Aragon and found a check, a receipt made out for authorization for 600 or 300 mervedi, whatever it was, to one Magister Iudiorum Bonastruc de la Porta for having debated with Paulus Christianus. Now, unless there were two disputations going on with Paulus Christianus at the exact same time and the exact day, and they got the same honorarium, it means that the Ramban had a non-Jewish name. So that was actually pretty, I think, pretty cool. Well, the Rambam's name was Musa bin Maimun bin Abdallah. right? But if your sister brought home Musa bin Maimun bin Abdullah, I don't think your parents would jump up and down until maybe they found out. Maybe they wouldn't want to marry the Rambam. The Rambam was a doctor. I don't know. It's like the rabbi, and he was a rabbi doctor. You know, that's pretty, not bad. I could get into rabbi doctor. Anyways, in any event, Rabbeinu Yonah is generally, we know Rabbeinu Yonah generally because it comes to Rosh Chodesh Elul, there's a run on copies of Shari Tshuva. He was a Bal Musar, he was a Mekubal, he was all kinds of things. He was also a public figure. But for our point of view, Rabbeinu Yonah was the one who really brought home the Shita and the Derech and the Masarot of Bali Atosfos from France to Spain. He went all the way to France. He studied in Normandy in the town of Evreux, in the Beit Midrash of the brothers of Evreux, with the sons of Rabbeinu Schneier, and he studied there a very long time. The Ramban writes that he would write letters to his cousin, Rabbeinu Yonah, who was also his mechutin later, because Rabbeinu Yonah was a little bit older than the Ramban, I think. It depends. There was maybe 5-6 years difference. It wasn't like major. Asking him to please present certain chidush the Ramban had to the Gaonim of Spain. The degree to which the Rabbeinu Yonah absorbed this idea of that's the Derech Halima that one should have. Comes out beautifully in Rabbeinu Yonah's parish on Avos. Now, this parish he didn't hold it, the pen in his hand. Apparently, it was dictated to his students, but the students kept pretty good notes. On the Mishnah, Perek Beis of Avos, Mishnah Zion, he says, Mar b'chokhma bar b'yeshiva, Rotzalomar, Chokhmat hasvarava ha-pilpul. The way to go, analysis and pilpul. Pilpul in the good sense. Shal yedezehu marbe yeshiva ki yavoa talmidim lishmo divrayim chadashim ulitchadedimo v'lilmod inyan asvara hamitchadeshet ki chokma b'fnei atzma. In other words, if you set up yeshiva based on the shterech of Rabbi Tosfos, you'll be draw in talmidim, and the more people, the more intellectual ferment, the more insight, the more wisdom, and so on and so forth. This could have been written over on the dedicatory plaque of all the Balabatim who gave money to the yeshiva of Rabbeinu Tam in Ramaru, or to that of the Ri and Dampier. Right? So this is where he's at. And in fact, in those Perushim that we only have actually in full one book of his on of Chidushim. By the way, in Spain they were called Chidushim and not Tosafot, which is interesting. We'll see in a minute why that is. They're called Aliyot de Rabbeinu Yonah, and it's on Baba Basra. And the reason why it's called Aliyot de Rabbeinu Yonah is because he summarizes at the end of long discussions. He summarizes everything, and comes up with the bottom line per sugya. Now that's important. Because here what you have is the beginning of what sets the Rabbeinu Yonah, and more importantly, the Ramban, apart from Tosfos. Tosfos never gives you a bottom line. Tosfos will make your answer, he asks a question with the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 1,000 answers, and then Viter. The Rabbeinu Yonah will always sum it up and say, what is the din? And here you have where the traditional emphasis on Halacha Lamaisa comes into play even in the so-called theoretical discussions of a sugya. That's point number one. Point number two, which sets off Rabbeinu Yonah and sets off the Sfardim somewhat from Bali Atosfos, is a deeper reverence for authority and for earlier opinions than you might find elsewhere. So might find in France, for example. So notice what he says in Perigimel in Avos. The Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Siag lechochma shtika, zes yag ben lechochma atzma ben lemidoteha." Keeping your mouth shut and keeping quiet for a while is good for all kinds of wisdom, whether it's for your ethical qualities or whether it's for your wisdom. Ketzad sheino nichnas letoch divrei chaveiro val mashelo shama omer lo shamati. First of all, you don't cut your friend off. Give him the credit, benefit of the doubt. Listen to him. And don't sit there and try to force yourself to say something which you don't know. Afal pishei na michlal hashtika. Hashtika meviyali dekach lachochma. How? Ketzet sheino midaber b'fnei misha gadol mimenu b'chokhma, ki alomed b'fnei rabo, v'rueh svara achat kalacha, al yachshov miyad ki hiya amitit, v'lo yitzelo omra b'term shisayem rabo midaber. You might have gotten an insight with your teachers to speaking, and you want to jump right in. Wait a minute. Cool it. Listen to him first. V'im yaseh kein, yafsid ma shiomar rabo, v'lo yedah svarot min hachamim akadmonim. He won't know what the other generation said earlier. Ki libo navin nad milo diya datam. Because you're going to get off the beaten track and you'll miss what he has to tell you. V'gam ki svaratel lo tuchal liyot mechuvenet kol kach ad shishma ma sha'amru arishonim, v'yishkol mazanet sichlo. Because you yourself, your own ideas are not, it's not going to be balanced and well thought through unless you know against the background against which it's coming. Eze yichshar, which is right and which is wrong, it's only by first accepting what the early generations have to give you, then you can really responsibly add thereto. The same kind of freewheeling kind of discussions, you get the impression from Tosfos, here is much more conservative, much more balanced. That comes up very powerfully in the Ramban, who, as I said, was his slightly younger cousin, who took the derech of Balei HaTosfos, and for Chaim Soloveitchik says, and took it to levels that no one ever had ever dreamed of, not even the Balei HaTosfos himself. There's no way that I'm going to do justice to the Ramban. I will tell you only that when I say that the Ramban took learning to a level that had never not been seen before, that's not my judgment, because katzonti. I heard myself in my own ears the Rav say that he thinks that the Ramban was greater than the Rambam. When the Rav was on vacation, he would sit there and just his free time reading was to learn the Sefer Mitzvahs with the Ramban, especially the Sharashim, because they're thematic essays on all kinds of things, and the depth is incredible. When he gave shiurim in Boston and Chumash, he learned with us Chumash with Ramban, and many, many, many of his most famous drushes are based on his time with the Ramban. If you take a look at Rav Lichtenstein's, it's not really his sefer, the book of interviews that was written together with Rav Chaim Sabato, I believe there he also says that as far as he was concerned, if he had to meet somebody in Olam Haba, he'd want to meet the Ramban. Yep, the Ramban, he covered all of Shas. He wrote on all of Shas. He wrote books of halachic codes. He wrote tshuvas. He wrote poetry. He interpreted all of Chumash with a parish which is mind-boggling in its depth and its breadth. What else did he do? He was also a public figure. He was also a physician. He was also the unofficial head of the Jewish community. He was also a polemicist. On and on and on and on. And with the same kind of reasoned, careful genius that is really not to be believed. Since we only have a few minutes, I'd like to highlight a few aspects of his creativity that will give you a beginning of a sense of who he was. On the one hand, take a look what he says down here. This is from his the introduction that he wrote to the to his Hasagos on the Rambam Sefer Mitzvahs. And he wrote, Hineni im choshki v'chefzi liyot l'rishonim talmid. The Ramban first saw himself as a disciple of the earlier greater authorities. L'kayem divrehem u'lahamid. And I always try, if they're attacked, if they're criticized, I always want to defend them and to try to make a case for them. L'asot otam l'tzavarei revid val yadit samid. Like a necklace around my neck, and as some kind of charm bracelet up on my arm. The Ramban noticed. The Ramban, with one or two small exceptions, never wrote independent commentary. He never wrote independent works. He didn't write a chibur, as the Rambam did, which is stand alone. He wrote perushim. He wrote a Perush to Chumash, and he wrote Perushim to Navi, and he wrote Perushim to Shas, and he wrote Hasagas on, and he wrote Perushim on the Rif, and he wrote Perushim on. The idea is that when you write a Perush, you, by definition, are signaling your deference and dependence upon the greater authority who you are interpreting. Now, you may come up with brilliant insights as a result, but the formatting of what you're doing is of a different sort. He says, despite that, lo eyeh lahem chamor nosei sfarim tamid. I'm not a blind. I don't believe in blind obedience. Evchar darkam veida erkam. I will choose their path. I will know their value. Ach basher lo yachilu rayonai. But when I can't agree with them, or when I can't get, I think we would say we can't wrap my head around what they have to say. Lifnei bekarke eshpot lemarei einai. I will make up my own mind. I am not going to give deference when it comes to taloche. This kind of great deference plus independence of thought is precisely the dynamic which runs the Ramban. His classic example of defending earlier authority, okay, and where he actually lands this is one of the most resonant statements in rabbinic literature, I think. At the age of 19, don't you hate that? At the age of 19, he decides he's going to write a commentary. Now, you know, the Rif was the bottom line of halacha for many generations in Spain. In the 12th century, came Rabbi Zrachya Halevi of Gerona, also from Catalonia, moves to Provence, and he writes a book called the Baal HaMa'or, or the Sefer HaMa'or, in which he criticizes the Rif in light of Provençal practice, again, Rashi, whatever the case may be. He across the boards disagrees with the Rif. At 19, and he was a wildly creative Mefarish, you should know. I mean, the most interesting shitas, among the most interesting shitas in halacha, the Baal HaMa'or. We'd always accept him. Sometimes, in general, the wilder the shita, the less chance the guy's going to get accepted. But no, it happens to be a fact. But he's certainly eye-opening. And he, at 19, decides, I'm going to defend the Rif against, I have to defend the Rif against the Baal HaMa'or. So notice what he says. After, in the middle of his introduction, he says as follows, Vataha mistakel b'sifri. You are reading my book. Al tomar bilvavcha ki kol shuvotai al harav Rabbeinu Zrachya kulam beinai shuvot nitzachot. Don't think that I think every single one of my answers or defense in defense of the Rif is a killer. It's a clincher. Umachrichot, or absolutely necessary and can't be refuted. Umachrichot otcha lahodot bahem al pnei ikshutcha, that you, despite your, that they're compelling you to overcome your stubbornness and agree with me. V'titpa'er biyotcha misapek achat mehen alomdeha, and don't be such a knacker if you think that you found that it was there's a weakness in the logic and the argument that I make on behalf of the Rif. Al dat chalikanes benekav amachat, and so on. Ein a davar kein, okay. Ain't a davar kein. It's not true. Not every single argument that I've made on his behalf do I personally agree with, or is it absolutely a clinching killer point that nobody can undo? Ki yodea kolomei talmudenu. Everybody who learns Gemara knows. She'ein b'machloket mefarshav ra'ayot gemurot, because there are no absolute proofs in halacha. Lo berov kushiyot chalutot, and in general, there are not absolutely irrefutable. No, there are no refutable answers, and there are no insoluble questions. She'ein b'chokma hazot mofet barur. There's a mistake. It should be barur. There's no absolute proof, as there is in cheshbonei hatshboret, as you do find in algebra, v'nisyonei atchuna, or you find in astronomy. So he's saying, you know, you should know that in general, I recognize the limits of human logic. I'm doing my best here, but you know, not every position of the Rif is defensible. And in general, it's a question of reasonableness. Now it's interesting. That already shows you the influence more of that sounds less Spanish than it does Ashkenazic. But this is when he's 19, so it's interesting how this works. As far as his attitude towards Baliatosis are concerned. I brought you a few lines from a poem that he wrote. In the 1230s, there was another round of the war against the Rambam, the rabbis of northern Spain, the Balei Tosfos, put the Rambam, Sefer Mada, and the Mora in Cherem. Ultimately, the Rambam was burned in Montpellier when a bunch of Jews went to the Inquisition and said, you think you have problems with heresy? We have problems with heresy too. This is Rabbi in Egypt who wrote heresy. They turned over the books of the Rambam to the Inquisition, and the Rambam was burned in public in Montpellier sometime in the 1230s. No, his works. The Rambam died in 1205. No, not the Rambam. Somebody else besides the books? Anyways, he writes, so before this happens, but after the Cherem, the Ramban writes to Spain, to the Balei Tosfos in Paris, I guess in Paris, and writes him a letter trying to say, would you please, you can't do this. We need these books. I mean, even though he was opposed to the Ramban himself. But he writes as follows. Your righteousness is like the sun at the zenith in the heavens. That you give off. I can't even fathom the light that you give off. Don't think I'm an animal. Don't see me as if I'm some kind of. This is the Ramban writing, guys. He's already in his 40s. Al tiruni. Kitvuli mieza tam dantuni. Why have you judged me so harshly? Lolo sifi adir naichuel de kigonda havale tsrichlodia. You have to tell me what's going on. Vachashalosh achinu mi pe lepe, the chorotchem nitspe, since we can't talk person to person, I'm waiting for your answer. Ladat keshet amrechem, to know exactly what you said. Mi pi sifrechem nitchanen, we'll know better from those things that which you write. Okay, Shami Dinazot Mishubeshit Begayasot Leafshir Lemaite Kadam Rabbanan. The travel is dangerous. And Rabotenu at Sorfatim, Talmidechem Anu. You are our rabbis of France, we are your students. Umeimechem Hanu Shotim. We depend upon your wisdom. Understand our position that you can't just sit there and ask for the Rambam. But the line here, Rabotenu at Sorfatim, Talmidechem Anu, Umeimechem Hanu Shotim, is a statement which lines up with what we know from Rabbeinu Yonah and from the Ramban. We don't have time. I cited for you one line, one chiddush from the Ramban in Ksubis in a psugi that you read. Again, this is from Hu Yoshein Bein Hanoshim Vehi Yoshein Bein Hanoshim. It's a perfect example of how the Ramban functions. He quotes Balei Tosfos, quotes earlier opinions, analyzes them, and then comes to a bottom line, just like Rabbeinu Yonah, number one. Number two, you don't find the same, generally, the same kind of line-by-line relations between the Mefaresh and the text like you do by Balei Tosfos. Balei Tosfos, despite the fact that they work off the assumption that Rashi interpreted the whole Gemara, made it available, well, also they'll deal with this line and that line and whatever. Generally speaking, Chidushei Sfarad are not point-by-point, they are more topical. The more important chidushim, the more general issues are, that generally speaking, chidushei Sfarad are topical, are long disquisitions on point central issues in a sugya, not on havaminas and not havaminas, unless they have some kind of constructive. So that's a serious shift. Again, most likely influenced by the halacha lemaisa or the halachic orientation of classic Spanish. Jewish culture. Finally, I gave you three short lines from an absolute masterpiece of the Ramban, something which I hope you'll have time to learn sometime in the future if you haven't learned it already, the Kuntres Dina de Garmi. The Gemara in Baba Kama talks about a question, well, what happens if you know that if you're mazik, you have to pay damages. If you indirectly cause damages, large part your putter. There's a middle case called Grama Benizokin. There are middle cases where you haven't quite directly caused damage, but your involvement in the damage is much more intense than those cases where it's just the indirect causality. That's called Garmi. There are a whole bunch of cases where we paskin Dayan Dina Dagarmi, we paskin like Reb Meir, that in fact that in fact we hold, in those cases, we hold the perpetrator liable. Tosfos, in dealing with these multiple cases, generally says that there's no logic behind them. It's a bunch of gazeres. They said this is too, really the guy's putter, but nevertheless, because he was so involved to an act of direct and willful damages, so we're going to be kones him, we're going to charge him, even though technically he's not really responsible. It's a bunch of knasot. It's a bunch of gazeres. It's a rabbana. The Ramban comes out and says, absolutely not. The Ramban works mightily to find underlying principles that draw it all together, arguing that it's that you really chayiv, because garmi is an act of vandalism. What's important here is, first of all, he sees things much more broadly. He is much more consistent in terms of his conceptual vision. He wants a conceptual vision of things. That's one of the reasons why the Briskers love the Ramban. More than that is the fact that the Ramban in general, and this is true in many other things, you wrote a whole parish on the Yerushalmi that gives this idea, that the Ramban was very, very interested in breaking down and getting past individual cases to try to arrive at the underlying principles which inform all of halacha, whether it's one specific issue like Garmi, or whether it's broader issues of how Shas works. And that, again, is a function, I think, of his classic, of his Spanish, his own personal genius, and also of a general Spanish orientation. Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed this. I hope Hasha Idach Perusha Zilgmor. Have a healthy trip back to the other side of the world. Enjoy the summer. It's summer there, right? And be well.